Hello, this is Lee Merriweather, Catwoman from the original Batman movie, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books, thank heavens, come to life.
Hello, comic book fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. As always, thanks for joining me here in the lair. And welcome to year two of Comic Book Central. Hope you had a blast listening along throughout the first year of the show. I had a blast recording all those episodes, so thanks for listening. If you're new to Comic Book Central, welcome. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or check out the website, comicbookcentral.net, to catch up on the first 50 episodes of the show. I will say this, episode 50 is a good place to catch up. We revisited a lot of those classic moments over the first past year. That was fun. So thanks for checking that episode out if you have. If not, that's a good place to start. But I have to say, there was one clip that I wanted to get into that show. I kind of had it in my back pocket when I first started putting the anniversary show together. But with all the writing and going back through the archives and editing and so on and so forth, there was a lot of work putting all that together. I didn't edit that one clip into the final show. It's a clip that I had from the very first episode of Comic Book Central with my special guest, Stan the Man Lee. How could I forget that clip, right? Well, Stan and I talked about his fans, and I had planned to edit that clip into the fans segment toward the end of episode 50. Like I said, it didn't make it in, so I want to make sure I play that now. Stan had mentioned something I thought was very important, so I wanted to make sure that I revisit it. It's still close enough to the first anniversary of Comic Book Central, right? Okay, here it is. From the premiere episode of Comic Book Central, Stan the Man Lee. Stan, what would you say? You know, you've got a chance to talk to those of us who have loved your work over the years, the characters that you co-created with some of the geniuses, the legends in the business. What do you have to say to some of the listeners who have really appreciated?
Oh, I'd say I admire that taste. No, it's great. It's great to have fans. I love the fact that whatever we do, there's somebody who enjoys it. And I think there's nothing better than doing some work that you feel can bring enjoyment or pleasure to other people. And I'm very lucky that I'm in that line of work. I'm very lucky that I'm in the entertainment field, because I think entertaining people, especially in times when there's so much to worry about and so much trouble in the world, if you can make people happy for a little while, then I think that's a good thing. So I'm very lucky that that's one of the things we do.
How true is that? I know I feel that way when things aren't going quite right, or things are just happening in the world that are just really tough to deal with. How nice is it to just get away for a little while, maybe an hour or two, catch a movie, watch a favorite TV show, read a good book, just spend a little bit of time with these incredible folks who take us on some wild adventure. Just a brief escape that puts a smile on our face, takes our mind off our troubles for a little bit. Just, as I mentioned, get a little bit of a break sometimes. Maybe take that rainbow bridge to Asgard, or soar through the sky with Superman and Lois Lane, kick back with the Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, hey, here's a great idea. We'll get away on a very cool mini adventure. Why not hang out in the Batcave? My guest today is here to celebrate the 75th anniversary of Batman. We've been doing that all year long on Comic Book Central with some great Bat guests. She's also here to talk about the release of the original series on home video and the original Batman movie where she appeared as Catwoman. Check this out, and I'll be right back to talk with Miss America, Lee Merriweather. In 1966, just one month after the season one finale of the Batman TV series, the first feature-length Batman movie hit the theaters. It was originally intended as a pilot for the TV series, but the producers decided to launch the series and then hold this script for a feature spectacle. And they pulled out all the stops. Adam West and Burt Ward, of course, brought the dynamic duo from the small screen to the big screen. And holy vehicles, did they travel in style! We not only got the Batmobile, we got the Batboat, Batcopter, and Batcycle, complete with Bat Sidecar. And the Caped Crusaders didn't just face one diabolical villain. Oh no, for the movie, we got the United Underworld, Cesar Romero's Joker, Burgess Meredith's Penguin, Frank Gorshin's Riddler. And while Julie Newmar was away, the cat was still at play. But who could fill the skin-tight catsuit to perfection? None other than Miss America, Lee Meriwether. Lee was crowned with the title Miss America in 1955, the first year the pageant was televised. She went on to make numerous appearances in some of the biggest shows of the day, Dragnet, Leave It to Beaver, Perry Mason, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And when the casting call went out for the felonious feline in the new Batman film, Lee left quite an impression during the audition, as you will soon hear. After causing catastrophe for Batman and Robin, Lee's incredible run of television appearances continued with memorable roles on The Time Tunnel, Mission Impossible, Star Trek, and 8 seasons, 178 episodes, 2 Golden Globe nominations, and an Emmy nomination for her role as Betty Jones alongside Buddy Ebsen in the hit detective series Barnaby Jones. Oh, my guest today is an Emmy-nominated actress. It's for her role alongside Buddy Ebsen's Barnaby Jones. She is a winner of the Miss America pageant. And to legions of Bat fans everywhere, she is the felonious feline Catwoman. A big welcome to, oh, kids, it's Lee Meriwether. Lee, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, this is fun. And the voice, Catwoman.
Thank you so much.
I tell you, between you and Julie Newmar, this is fantastic.
No, Julie's got a great purr. And Ursa, I think they'll beat us out, both of us.
I will, yeah.
She had it in her throat, and it was there. I mean, she just had it. I was so envious of her.
Yeah, she didn't start the role, but my goodness, she made it memorable. I mean, she brought her own take to it.
Absolutely.
Well, definitely. There's one other actress, though, and I will say this. You have at least 3 things in common with a former guest on this very show. That would be Adrienne Barbeau. Aside from being stunningly beautiful and talented actresses, you also both played the iconic character Catwoman. She did the voice on the animated series. And do you know the third thing you both have in common?
Having possibly worked with my husband, my first husband.
Well, probably. Let's see. Well, in my world, you were both celebrity panelists, bottom row left, on what is the greatest game show in the history of television, Match Game.
Match Game, yes.
Mm-hmm. Please tell me you remember it.
Oh, of course.
Okay, thank goodness.
I can't tell you how many times I've done that show. I really did the show any number of times.
Oh, because Adrienne was limited on it, so she didn't remember a whole lot. She remembered more of the pyramid. But thank goodness, you remember Match Game, so this is good. And as my listeners know, I have what some have called an unhealthy obsession with the show. So as I did with Adrienne Barbeau, I'd like to play a few rounds of Match Game with you, if you don't mind.
Oh, good heavens. Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, we're going to... she's playing along, thank goodness. We're going to go back earlier in your career. Let's talk about the 50s a little bit. The first one is Miss Blank. Miss Blank.
Well, let's try America.
That's it, yes! See, it all comes flooding back. Charles Nelson Reilly, yeah, he would have been saying, oh. All right, your path to becoming a beauty contestant, that wasn't planned, was it? That was kind of a surprise to you.
No, I would never have entered the pageant. I didn't know anything about the pageant had I realized that it was a scholarship foundation that, you got scholarship to go to school from just being in the Miss America pageant or in the local pageant. But at the time, I had never heard that, but thank heavens it happened. It was just sheer luck. As I understand it, it was an African-American fraternity at our city college in San Francisco, and they didn't have a sorority, sister sorority. And so they just said, well, listen, well, I think the junior chamber sent out a blanket letter to all of the junior colleges and the senior high schools and said, you know, send us your girls, and offering these scholarships and all. And so they said, well, can we nominate someone? And I guess someone said yes. And so someone in that group said, well, we choose Lee Merriweather. So that was for that particular, there were about four girls from the Interfraternity Sorority Council that actually competed. They had auditioned. Two of them didn't get into being the 15 semifinalists, but two of them did. So it was, you know, it was very special. It really was.
Did you ever find out like how your name got thrown into the mix or why they?
No.
This was totally anonymous, right? You like
totally wow. Anonymous. What I really thought was that it could have been. There were a couple of fellas from George Washington High School where I worked and I was studying and I wanted to be an actress and I had done a couple of plays there and all that. There were a couple of fellows that had been in the drama department and they might have been in that fraternity and they might have been on the committee. That's all I can think of. Wow. I don't know.
That's amazing. Well, it was life changing.
I can't imagine what my life would have been without it. I'll tell you that.
This was from the Miss San Francisco Beauty Pageant.
Mm-hmm.
You got okay, and then
San Francisco, and then they told me after I won, they said, "Well, now next it's Miss California," and I said, "Oh, am I supposed to go there?" They said, "Yes."
That would help.
Oh dear!
My goodness. So, well, and for the Miss America pageant, did the fact that this was the first televised Miss America pageant, did that have any impact on how you approached the competition?
I had no knowledge that it was the first. None of us did.
Wow!
It was just
how
happening.
Does that happen?
So,
like they did they? Did,
well, they
they're just cameras were there.
There were cameras there, but it was. As we had never been there before, and we had never seen the pageant before,
wow.
we didn't know what was going on. So, you know, there were newsreel cameras, I guess, and there were because I had seen newsreels of the pageant since then. And unfortunately, that telecast being the first one, somehow it's gone. No one can find it.
Oh, so it doesn't even exist anymore. None of the footage at all.
Or at least, there's a little bit newsreel
okay.
kind of thing, you know. Then
wow, that's amazing.
That they use or whatever, yeah.
Okay, well, at least you didn't like. I mean, at least you didn't know ahead of time. That probably would have made you nervous, or at least, yeah. So
yes, no, I don't know. It was fun to do, and the girls were always so. Well, all of them were so great, and. I had picked a couple of girls that I figured were going to win, and the one I really thought was going to win, she came in second. I did pretty good.
You did. You did very. Yeah, that was. You did amazing. You did an amazing job.
She and I were partnered together, and they thought it would be funny to have Miss Florida and Miss California partnered, so that you know the rivalry of California and Florida, blah blah blah,
coast to coast. Yeah, well, hey, whatever. You won that rivalry. So, do you still have the crown?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Not the one that I was crowned with.
Okay.
That has gone out to sea. The basement of Convention Hall was flooded during one of the hurricanes. And a lot of I think the robe that they put on, you know, the red robe with the ermine fur and all of that, that went out. The actual crown went out. The scepter, I think, went as well. It was a shame. They did have a copy of the kinescope. And that went out as well.
Oh, wow.
And out to the sea.
So they gave you a replacement crown then?
Yes, years later they said, okay. We're going to have a reunion and we're inviting all of Miss America's back. Just don't forget, bring your crowns. And I told Lenora Salata, who was head of the pageant, Lenora, I don't have a crown. And she said, yes, you do. And I said, no, I don't. And because I gave my crown when I crowned Sharon K. Ritchie, I just took it off my head, the one that they had given me for particular thing, and I put it on her head, and that's it. And so every once in a while, I remind Sharon, I said, you have my crown, you know, that is my crown.
Well, when was the last time you tried yours on?
Oh, I've had it on for pictures just recently. Someone was doing a, some kind of a newspaper,
like a photo
magazine.
Op. Yeah, a little
layout.
Photo op.
Yeah,
right.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And they said, get your crown out. And I still have the giant-sized trophy that they used to give out.
I've seen a picture of you with that. That's
anymore.
Right. I did see that. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, how did you make the transition in acting from Miss America, beauty pageant queen, to acting?
Well, during my year, Philco Television was a sponsor of the Miss America pageant's scholarship foundation, and they had Philco Television Playhouse, and they had Sumner Locke Elliott. And they had Roger Herson write two plays for me where I starred in them. Isn't that something?
Wow.
That's phenomenal. I mean, the luck of all of that happening.
All within and that year. My goodness.
Yes, and to get good reviews, too.
Oh, yeah, that always helps.
Yes. Oh, you know, it could have been ghastly. But, no, I did my work. I played the roles, and it went well. It really did.
Wow.
It started from there, and then I went on to the Today Show, where I didn't do any acting for quite a while. They let me go for a couple of TV shows filmed in one in Annapolis and one down in Florida. And so I wasn't that far away from the show, and I was only gone for about 4 days each. So
okay, yeah, getting up early in the morning, I'm sure that was fun.
My
background.
Yes.
I used to
4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep, I did that. My first television job.
Oh,
I was running studio camera. That's fun. Yeah, there's not enough coffee. There's never enough coffee for that. Well, so that, yeah, and I saw some of these. So some of your early roles, you were like the girl. As you're going in, but then all of a sudden it was like one television show, one television appearance after another. So let's get into some of these acting roles. How about the next round of Match Game? You ready for that?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, by the way, do you have any good Match Game stories? I mean, do you like Richard Dawson? Adrian Barbeau said he didn't hit on her. I can't imagine he didn't hit on Miss America.
No, Richard didn't. He was really super.
Okay.
He was a great guy. And I was married. He wasn't step on anybody's toes.
Anything crazy, Charles Nelson Reilly? Because there's always like talk of them drinking on the set and in between lunch.
No, I never saw him. I never smelled it because I didn't drink, and I always could smell if anyone had been drinking.
Okay.
Even which they say, oh, well, you can't smell vodka on my breath. Oh, yes, I can anyway.
Well, Charles Nelson Reilly's always making those jokes with Brett. She's like, it's water in the cup. He's like, yeah, water from Russia.
Yes.
All right.
I don't think so. I really don't. Honest to goodness.
No crazy stories coming out? Gene Rayburn, anything like that?
No. The one disappointment throughout the entire time and all of the shows that I did, I had the best comeback for one of the things, I'll tell you what it was. He read the card. Dracula was really upset. Dracula was playing hockey, and he was really upset because they wouldn't let him blank the puck. Okay. So, and they said,
okay.
A couple of them said, because I knew, I'm going to say, and then, of course, a couple people before me said, you know, suck the puck.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's what I would say. Yeah,
because
suck the blood, suck your neck,
Exactly. So that's what I said. And I said, before I said it, I said, well, everybody knows he's the biggest puck sucker in town. And they made me film it over.
They edited that out?
Yes, they edited it out, and it was the best laugh. I mean, the whole audience erupted. I mean, it was the best, biggest laugh ever, ever, ever. And I had to do it over again with, suck the puck.
And then move on. Richard does his little thing. Oh, Lee. This is great, though. Now it's out there. Now we know. This is the match game. Deleted scenes.
The deleted scenes.
Oh, perfect. That's a great story. That's what I wanted. Now you've made my evening here. This is perfect. Yes, I got a great match game story now. All right, next round of match game. Here we go. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Blank Trek.
Star Trek.
That's it. Yes. See how, it's all coming back. You're like the best match game player ever. This is awesome. All right. Something else you have in common with Julie Newmar. You both played Catwoman. She was on an episode of Star Trek. Now you're coming in. This is third season, That Which Survives. And you became part of history by killing off one of the red shirts. Do you know?
I do.
Okay. So you know what that is, right?
Yes. Yes. I touch you and you're dead. Your brain becomes homogenized. I played two characters like that. One on Mission Man from U.N.C.L.E., I played a scientist who developed a pen that held next to the skull, and you click it, it homogenized the brain. And Lucira was able to do that with just a touch on his shoulder.
Correct. And it was a red shirt right off the bat. So, yeah, we knew. You also got a blue shirt, too. You took a blue shirt out as well. You don't want to be around Lucira at this point. What was your experience like in the world of Star Trek? We're well into the run of the show at this point. So people are, the fan base is there.
Well, I was so excited that I would actually get to meet Dr. McCoy,
DeForest Kelly, yep.
D, I was calling him Lee.
I know, we wish we could have called him D.
D, Lee, and then, yes, I just adored him. And he came by me the first day. My costume had one of those cover the belly button kind of things, a hip hugger outfit, but then in the front it popped up and was covering the belly button. And he came by me, pulled it down, and said, "What time is it?" And walked away. And I was flabbergasted. I was embarrassed and all that. And then a day went by, another day went by. I kept waiting. Another day came by, and finally he was back on the set, and he walked by me, and he said, "What time is it?" Flipped the thing down. He looked, and he went, and dropped to his knees and laughed hysterically, rolling on the floor. I had been every day for the full 8 hours or 9 hours that I was on the set, I had glued a clock face into my belly button so that if he did it again, there was a clock face staring at him, and he died. It was the best ever.
That was great. I'm surprised you got away with the belly button thing, because Jeannie never could do that.
No, but it had a flap. He pulled down the flap
of
my costume. So Jeannie was covered. Someone could have gone by and pulled down the belly button area, but they didn't.
Oh, that's crazy.
He did, but for me, that's for sure.
Very memorable role in that. Yeah, you played this sort of, artificial intelligence that's, protecting
Exactly.
Yeah, so what was it like to work with William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy on that? I mean, this is... Like I said, season three coming in pretty huge.
Great fun. I love them both. They're just dear. I had worked. I've since worked with Leonard on Mission Impossible on a couple of those episodes, and he's a dear sweet man. And so it's been. Yeah, we've had great fun, good laughs. I think he tried flirting. But he knew I was married, and that was kind of the end of that. And it was fun,
That's our Kirk. That's our Kirk. Yeah. We would not want it any other way. You are not disappointing me at all in this interview. It's exactly what we want to hear. Of course William Shatner flirted with you. You're Miss America. Why wouldn't he? All right. So that's a fun episode to watch. We can go back. Well, how about, let's take a final round of match game. You ready for this one?
Okay.
Here we go. Bat blank. Bat blank.
Batman? Could it be Batman?
I think it is. You're very good at this. Batman, 1966, the original Batman movie. Miss Kitka, which is an acronym.
Yes, for Kitania Irina Patania Kerenska Alefov. My friends call me Kitka.
Oh, this is best interview ever. This is amazing. I was wondering how many takes did it take you to get the name? Did you get it right off the first one?
Actually, they changed the schedule and said, we're filming this section of the scene where you have to say that. And I went, what? Oh, come on. I haven't worked on it. I don't. So they said, you've got 5 minutes. I learned those names in 5 minutes.
Wow.
And it was so scary because I didn't want to hold up production and I didn't want to have to do it again. And they came. Luckily, it was, I knew Kitka. Wow. So Kitka was there to help me. And it just stuck. So
you nailed it. All these years later, it's still amazing too. Yeah, because they're shooting on a pretty tight schedule for this movie, right? I mean, it was pretty quick.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Uh-huh. I think they really shot on the normal TV series schedule.
Wow.
Time is money, folks. I heard them say any number of times.
Oh, man. Yeah, they were moving quick. I think your scene's, like 3 weeks maybe?
Yeah, I think they did it. Actually, I think it was something like 18 days.
Wow.
Which was phenomenal. I think everyone was going, huh?
That's amazing. Did anyone inspire your accent that you had for that? How did you sort of channel that?
No, I was lucky in that I've got a pretty good ear, and a gal that I had done a play with was Russian, and I had listened to her in the dressing room, and I just thought, oh, that's a neat sound, and it was in my head, and so I was able to use it.
Yeah, it's
and
very
I've used it a couple of times.
Yeah, it adds a really, very cool dimension to the character of Catwoman. Now, Julie Newmar played Catwoman in the first season, and then had you seen any of her episodes going into your performance in the movie?
No, they told me before I went into the movie to do the movie. They said, we're going to show you. We don't want you to copy her voice. We don't want you to copy anything like that. We just want you to look at the way she moves. And so they showed me a brief. I think it was like a 5 or 10 minute clip of her with no sound. And I watched, and I knew she was a dancer. So I thought, obviously they want liquid fluid kind of moves. And that was easy for me because of the cats I've lived with over the years. And I had done in class, in New York with Strasberg, a cat exercise. So I had done all of that kind of manipulation of your body where you stretch and you purr and you move and you do all that stuff.
Were these the cats in Phoenix, Arizona?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a cat that was, and that's where I got my meows too.
Okay.
Because I remember vividly, meow. On our back fence. Every night, just about. We had about 3 or 4. They weren't our cats. They were neighborhood cats, but they would come because we had a good ample fence and an ample walkway so they could wander up and down and just cried at the moon to their heart's content.
Yeah, I think you're in the film, you're riding on one of Penguin's umbrellas.
Exactly.
And I think you described that type of meow to a reporter, I remember, one time.
Yeah, well, that was a day of, we had to loop everything because of the sound of the propellers and the wind that they had to create while we were on there. So I had to go in, and that's the first time I've ever had a looping page of meow, 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 purr, purr. Meow, meow, really loud, loud, loud meow, different.
So it's like you're doing a cat food commercial or something.
I think I should.
Oh my
I've got
God.
It down pretty pat.
You had a lot of, I think you actually freaked out one of the pirates that was in the sub scene.
Yes.
That look it kind of makes when you're just kind of like to yourself.
That was,
Yeah, that was Joel. He really did. He just went, what? And they left it in.
It was a great look. Yeah, it's a great look. Now, Adam West on the Adam West Burt Ward commentary on the movie, they mentioned Julie, I guess, was working on McKenna's Gold at the time.
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was a film job that she had.
So he mentioned that you came in to read. Here's what Adam West said. He said, Lee came in to read. She remembered how her cat moved and sat there with the producers and kind of cleaned her fur and other things the producer thought might work. Can you elaborate a little bit on that initial audition scene?
Actually, I did. Well, the thing he didn't mention I don't know what all he mentioned. I was never given one of those, those DVDs, so I've never seen that. But anyway, Les Martinson had me sit down, and they gave me a wonderful big chair, so I was able to curl up in it and still hold the script in my lap. And then when I came in, I thought, because there was at least 100 girls out in the outer office when I came in. And I looked at them, and I thought, and they were all gorgeous, all voluptuous. And I thought, oh, no, no, no. Oh, nobody's going to, that's it. And I thought, well, maybe if they could just maybe remember me, maybe they might think about me. So I walked in, and I went, hello. And it was a pleasure. How are you? Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. And I didn't have a voice like that. And then when I started reading, then I just came down to my own level and made it kind of purry and slow and low.
Very memorable.
And then licked my hand and rubbed my face, whiskers, and all, and around the ear and all. And just did as much of the cat that I could. And it worked.
Yeah, it did. Not shocking that you got the role. That's pretty amazing. Now, were you a fan of the TV series? Did you know the comic book? Did you know the character? Or were you like, I've got to get this role?
Oh, yes. When I was little, I probably had the number one comic book. I saved all my pennies from pulling weeds and would go down to the store and buy comic books.
Oh, well, I mean, see, I wouldn't have thought that, because usually a lot of the guests we have, they do their research after they get the role, and I thought, well, Miss America, she's not going to have read comic books when she was a kid. But you were a comic book reader.
I was. That's how I learned to read.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. My mother would read to us, and then I would look at the words, and then she said, all right, now you read this. And so then I would read it, and that's how I learned to read. I was, four.
Good parenting skills. Good parenting skills.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
That's quality. Well, you got the role. It was an amazing role. And the movie was kind of a microcosm of the series, and you got to work with everyone.
All the Catwomen, I was the luckiest, because I got to work with Cesar Romero, Burgess Meredith, and Frank Gorshin, plus Adam West and Burt Ward. That's not bad.
I was just like, the whole cast, everybody said, you have the United Underworld, today Gotham City, tomorrow the world.
Exactly. The world, definitely.
Okay, who was the craziest one on set? Was it Gorshin?
No, he was very, they were all, it was a wonderful lesson for me, because their work ethic, each one, he was involved with the script. They were working their little bits. They're practicing. Oh, like Burgess he'd practice and practice that the cigarette holder and the cigarette, and then run silent, run deep, so that it would fall on run deep. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, that he worked on it, and Caesar worked on those sparkly things that were supposed to be electric, and he practiced how his hands would move with the electricity.
The joy buzzers.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And Frank, though he hated the tights, he worked physically. He worked physically to move a certain way. and he would move in the set, you know, and move around. Then when he got a costume that he loved, and he asked Les Martinson if he could take off the jacket because it had suspenders underneath, it had question marks all over his shirt, and he said, "Oh, please, let me do it because it's purple and it's green and it's all it's so." And Les said, no, come on, just do the scene. Just do the scene, Frank." And so, son of a gun, I watched him off on the side, moving, doing things, not taking it off, but sort of miming it almost. Then comes time to, okay, let's go. Let's places. Let's get up, get this going. And son of a gun, he got up from the table and he took off his jacket. You could see it in the movie. I mean, it's there because it was a perfect take.
So they're just
fabulous.
So they're just very methodical about this whole thing. I mean, it seems so manic. I mean, especially Gorshin seems so manic and so into this role.
Okay. All planned out, all worked out to the nth degree. All three. They were incredible to watch. As I say, I was the luckiest of all the Catwomen because I got firsthand teaching tools.
It just
came forward from them, and I saw how they worked. Their work ethic was brilliant.
Were they okay with it? Because it's a silly, goofy, basically kid show, cheesy, campy. But were they all okay with it?
Absolutely. I really think they were. Or if they didn't, or if they felt funny about it, they never let on, because it was serious business. It's something that you can't make fun of as you're doing it. Being serious, farce, you must be as serious and as honest as you can, because otherwise it does look cheesy.
That's exactly what Julie Newmar said.
That's something I learned. Oh, yeah?
Yep, that's exactly what she said, dead on. Yep. She said you got to play it straight as an arrow, because then that's where the humor comes from. So, wow, that's amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
The submarine fight scene, you're the only one that doesn't go in the water. How did you manage that?
They were very nice to me. And they needed me to throw a cat out, you know, and
poor Hecate. Is it Hecate?
Then Hecate, yes.
Poor cat. You're flinging him at Batman.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
The poor cat. It was Peter. Okay, apparently Peter wasn't on set at the time. Well, I guess
Hecate made a lot of money on that movie.
I'm sure the little stuffed Hecate go in there. Yeah, so how long did it take to film the fight scene? Because that's pretty elaborate.
That was a full day shooting. Actually, I think two, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
I think it took 2 days. It was the first thing I did, too.
That was the sub scene?
Yes, was the sub scene, and the things where everything was shooting off. And Caesar was the one who protected me. He showed me where to hide, how to put my back to the sparklers that were shooting out, and all. And he was always behind me, sometimes he pushed me over to the side. He was wonderful. He was really my protector.
Oh wow! Because as we've heard from Burt Ward, I think it was in his book and in the television movie, some of those stunts really went awry. So.
Some of the sparks, something you just couldn't know, that a spark would land farther than any other spark that they had used, you know.
It
ignited, but they got it out. It was okay, but it hadn't happened before. They had tried them all and everything, but it went well.
And what's nice about this, too, is that you get to shoot a lot of scenes as Miss Kitka. So you're not always in the Catwoman costume. So you get to a lot of interaction with Adam West. So what, you know, how, when you read that in the script, how did that seem?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it because it meant that I could be two characters. I could be totally two different characters. And that so seldom happens in film.
Yeah. And Batman never figures it out.
Oh, yeah, no, no.
Of course not. Until you break his heart at the end. Oh.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Do you still have the cat suit?
No, never had it. Mm. No.
I'm just from what I've seen, you probably still look amazing in it. So I was gonna, if you had it, I was gonna ask you when you tried it on, but you've got the crown. You've got the Miss America crown. So,
yeah.
Julie came back as Catwoman in season 2, Eartha in season 3. Was there any talk of you coming back to the role, or was that not even an option?
No, because I was already signed for Time Tunnel.
Okay. So you were already working on that series and filming and deep into that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. But speaking of season 2, though, and we've got the DVDs, the Blu-rays out now. You're in the movie, but my goodness, you are in the series. You get to also work with the great Victor Buono as King Tut.
I sure did. Oh, yes. And there's that famous line that you have to watch through the whole episode before you hear it with Adam West. I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay.
We'll gotta watch it.
We'll leave that to the fans getting the Blu-rays right now. So, you get to work with another. So how did they bring you back into the fold for that episode?
I was released from Time Tunnel, and they shot around me on our series on Time Tunnel, and then I just came in and filmed a whole bunch of things, one right after the other.
Wow!
So it was okay. It was not difficult at all.
So they had always wanted to have you back. They were just trying to figure out a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, I think so.
Well, amazing. And you got to work with Adam and Bert one more time. Return to the Batcave, The Misadventures of Adam and Bert. This was in 2003. For fans who haven't seen this, your cameo in this is very memorable.
Yes, it was. There's a story there, too, because I was supposed to have had a tattoo of Adam West's name.
That he signed back in the day in the 60s, that he signed for a fan on her chest.
Right,
on
the top of her little chest, yes.
Her cleavage, that's right, yeah.
And they said, John Lee, we've got one of the guys here, he's good, and he can write, it on it. And I said, no. Yeah, wait a minute. And so I went over to Adam, and I said, Adam, would you mind terribly? I mean, they're going to, it's Adam West, and they want it on my chest. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, Lee, sure. Are you sure you want them? I said, yes, you. That's okay. I don't know.
Adam actually signed that?
Yes.
That's actually Adam's signature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yep. There's a bit of trivia there. Okay. Now, I'm going to be watching that scene in a whole new way. My goodness. Now, you didn't get to work with Julie and Frank Gorshin again, did you? Because they're in the movie, but not in your scene.
No. Julie was there, and my daughter doubled her. My youngest is a stunt woman.
Oh, in the flashback scenes.
The stunt coordinator called her to stunt double her. And Robin was played by Jason Marsden, and Jason played my son in the Munsters Today when I did that. And what else was happening at the same time?
There's a lot of things going on there. So did you get to see Julie and Frank on set? Were you there when they were there? At all?
I saw Julie from a distance.
Okay.
But that was it. I didn't see Frank.
Okay.
At all.
But
I did a play with Frank.
Oh, years later.
A year
okay.
or two later. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did Play It Again, Sam, where I played six women, and a friend of mine, Bridget Hanley, played the lead, and we just had a great time. Bridget and I tried desperately to get him to do the impersonation of Humphrey Bogart. And he said, no. Finally, I said, just for us, just one night, just do it. And he did it, and he got great laughs and everything. Then no one could take it away from him.
They couldn't stop him from doing it. Once an actor gets that feedback, that's it. Oh, he's a master impressionist, too. I mean, that was just amazing.
Oh, yeah, he was just fantastic.
What's it like to work with these folks all these years later when you're coming back? Is it just like you kind of fall right back into that again?
Oh, yes, I think so. Things, people change, you know. Being around Adam and Bert at these memorabilia shows has been great fun. Great fun. We reminisce and we banter back and forth, and it's just great fun. And Julie and I have been doing fan conventions as well, too. And we have, great fun doing that. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, how can fans find out more about what you're up to now? You got the website?
Yes, I do. I have a website, LeeMerriweather.com. So
and you're on Twitter at Lee Merriweather, and Facebook, is it Lee Merriweather fan page?
I guess. I don't know about. Well, my daughters sort of keep tabs on.
I think she posts some things. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So fans want to find out about the movie that you're working on, plays, anything's going to be on there. Lee, it has been amazing catching up with you. I thank you for the insight in the original Batman movie. I thank you for playing Match Game with me. And I thank you for all of your unforgettable performances. Thanks for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I can barely remember what I did a few weeks ago, and Lee Merriweather remembers a question Gene Rayburn asked her on Match Game in the 70s? Oh my, she is an amazing woman. If you haven't already, be sure to check out her performance as Catwoman in the original Batman movie. And with the series DVD and Blu-ray sets out, you can check out Lee's King Tut episodes as well. I will say that is a memorable closing line by Adam West on that one episode. I think after this show, I'm going to go get me some milk and cookies. My thanks again to Lee Merriweather. Hey, for the latest on what Lee's up to, including her latest movie, she's in rehearsals for that right now, check out the website LeeMerriweather.com. You can follow Lee on Twitter at Lee Merriweather and like Lee on Facebook, Lee Merriweather fan page. And while you're doing all that social networking, be sure to check out Comic Book Central online, the website, and all of the previous 50 episodes are there, comicbookcentral.net. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you do that, you're not going to miss an episode. While you're there, please leave a review. Would love to know what you think of the show. Some of the guests that we've had on would love to get 50 reviews on iTunes as well. That helps in getting the word out. So if you're on iTunes, if you could take a minute and leave a review, it is appreciated. You can share the lair and follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. Like the show on Facebook at Facebook.com/ComicBookCentralNetwork. And I want to hear from you, Nation. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, or record an MP3, send it along. I'll play that on the show as well. Well, that is it for today, kiddies. Once again, my thanks to the legendary Lee Merriweather. I'm going to take off here, get that plate of milk and cookies, and watch Lee again as Catwoman. But fear not, I shall return. Same cat time, same cat channel, because next week on Comic Book Central, it's the young man who was the first actor in history to portray young Peter Parker. That was in the blockbuster films Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. Max Charles will be joining me here in the lair to talk Spidey mysteries and time traveling with Mr. Peabody. Until then, have a perfectly marvelous week. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
We are now passing through the grotto.
Left, a half fathom.
Engine, dead slow astern.
Yo-ho, dead slow astern.